Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Fermentable Planet Earth. This is Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Mary Izette.
Welcome to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We're broadcast live every Monday at 7 p.m.
And if you don't catch us now, but you're listening to us now, you can always catch us archived on iTunes.
Not iTunes yet.
Not
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
And HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Yeah. We'll be on iTunes soon, hopefully, okay. Which is kind of exciting. So announcements. So we'll do a reminder about Homebrew Alley.
Homebrew Alley is February 8th and 9th. It is a national homebrew competition sanctioned by the AHA and the BJCP. And we're holding it in Brooklyn, in Long Island City at Alewife Queens. You can go to homebrewalley.org to enter and to register your beers. Or if you want to help volunteer, or if you're a BJCP judge in the New York City area, please come help out and judge. We expect to have a decent amount of entries, and we're going to have a hell of a time on February 9th with the award ceremony and party.
Which is open to everybody. So if you're in the Tri-State area, you want to check out how a homebrew competition works and just come. Alewife has a fantastic variety of beer on tap at all times. So it's a good, if you haven't checked it out, this will be a good opportunity.
Yeah. But today, we're talking about something that I am not very familiar with. Mary actually introduced me to a beverage called Kvass.
Yeah, we have a very special guest who is calling in from Beaver Brewing Company in Western Pennsylvania.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey.
Awesome. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Very good. How are you guys doing?
Good. So you're only our second call-in guest, so we're still getting used to all of this. So we've got Dan Woodsky on the line. Dan, tell us a little bit about where you came from and how you started brewing.
Oh, well, I actually started brewing probably about 5 or 6 years ago. I started at home. And before that, I worked in politics, and everybody that I worked for decided to go to prison for one reason or the other. So I figured it'd probably be a good idea to get out of that and get into something different. So that's what really got me started into beer. I was in marketing and sales and politics before that, but I started brewing beer, and kind of the whole reason, I started brewing beers because I wanted something that I couldn't buy at the beer distributor. Or the local bar, whatever it was. So I started brewing different styles of beer, anything weird that I could get my hands on. And eventually I said, I want to start a brewery. I want to have weird different stuff at this brewery. And I figured, in all the research I was doing, I said, Kvass is probably the weirdest beer. I don't even like to call it beer because, it's technically a beer, but I really don't think it's a beer. But I figured it would be the weirdest thing I could make and really introduce it to people, because nobody, I have very few Kvass aficionados that come in there and said, this is the 80th Kvass I've had, this month. So I wanted to make something really different and unique, and this is kind of what I figured would be kind of crazy and off the wall.
Awesome. And
this is very up Mary's alley, by the way. This is exactly why she homebrews and kind of...
Yes, I have the same exact
same
reason.
What's the point of brewing the, IPA that you can have at the bar,
right.
700 variations of it? You might as well do something crazy.
That's right. And this is in large part why we're doing this show, is also to, kind of branch out and learn about all these different fermentable things. So what is the difference between Kvass and beer, or a normal beer?
Well, first off, kind of in ingredient-wise, normal beer... malt, yeast, water, hops, and a Kvass, the main ingredient to get your fermentable sugars out of is bread. If you hear some humming in the background, that's my cat Bemis. After several attempts to get him off of sitting off my lap, he just figured he'd jump in my face and say hello. So again, in a Kvass, the main ingredients are bread, water, lemons, and raisins. And there is also some yeast in there. You can make it without yeast or with yeast if you want to. Russian peasants figured out really early in history that if your main water supply was your pond, you'd get pretty violently sick pretty frequently. So they really needed something to kind of cleanse their water and kind of make it palatable to drink. So they'd get their old bread, they'd crush it up, put it in a jar, pour some warm water over it. They didn't have sugar cane, so they couldn't, you know, sweeten it up with sugar, so their only real sweetener was raisins. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have, they needed something, you know, people figured out really early on, too, that if you didn't get any vitamin C or citrus, you'd get scurvy and you'd lose your teeth, you know. People generally want to keep their teeth, so their only citrus they had over there in Russia at the time was lemons. So they'd squeeze a lemon over it, let it sit there for 2 or 3 days. The wild yeast in the air would actually ferment the drink a little bit. You know, in the end, you'd get a 0.5% to 1% alcoholic drink with a little bit of citrus and sugar from the raisins. And that's pretty much how I make it today. Very similar to that, except I do add yeast to it to kind of help the fermentation.
Now, I first was introduced to kvass about probably 12 years ago, maybe a little bit more, 12 to 13, 14 years ago. I was at a, I was in Boston, and I was at, I went by a beer store, and I bought kvass at the beer store, and I think this was a very unusual kvass, and I believe it was from Russia, but I think it was like 5 to 6%. Anyway, that was my first introduction to kvass, and I always thought about it. This is before I started brewing. I always kind of had it in the back of my mind because I really enjoyed it, and it was very unusual. And then I tried to make kvass several years ago and failed. It was a glutinous disaster.
It can definitely get like that.
Yes. Yeah. And so then last year, I don't know, I periodically will, these things will pop back up in my head. And I was searching and I found your book on Amazon. So Dan has written this book called Kvass. It's available as a Kindle download, or you can order the paper version. I personally have the Kindle on my iPad. It's fantastic. So I downloaded this last year, and then, I mean, it's extremely thorough book. So we're going to talk about, you know, kind of how to make the basics of making kvass. But I cannot, if you're interested in making this, regardless if you've never made fermented anything before, or if you're an advanced home brewer, this is the book to have. It's amazing.
Really simple.
So how did you, what was your first introduction to kvass?
It was really, I was just reading, again, I was really doing a lot of research to figure out, you know, what crazy style of beer, you know. I still to this day do not have a beer at the brewery called IPA. I still try to make as different stuff as I can. And just through research, and I was reading a lot about mead, actually. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's been around for over 1,000 years. And that kind of stumbled onto kvass, because the really poor Russian peasants that couldn't even afford honey, you know, they just said, well, the only thing that we have that's fermentable is bread, really. To kind of, like, again, it was all cleaning the water, too.
Mm-hmm.
And this was really their kind of, you know, home mechanism to kind of do that. But my ancestors are from Germany, Poland, Russia, and I was kind of doing, I wanted to do something that was kind of like a homage to something that was, you know, an Eastern European beer that people just, again, haven't bumped into. And the one thing that when people get kvass, what's different from a traditional kvass, something you'd make at home or what I have at the brewery, kvass does not keep very well. You know, the things that keep beer fresh and make it last, yeast, hops are a preservative, and alcohol is a preservative.
Mm-hmm.
All those things are really not all that prevalent in a kvass at all. So it's really difficult to keep, most Russian monks that still brew kvass in Russia today, after 5 days, they just dump whatever they haven't drank or sold.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of do the exact same thing here. I actually stretch it a week, but if it's not drank or sold in a week, I just get rid of it, because it's, you know, something that's really best enjoyed fresh. You know, making kvass really isn't all that hard to do at home, but like I always say, you know, you want to drink kvass kind of when it's ready. So, you know, don't make it and say, you know, in 4 weeks, Thanksgiving's coming up, so, you know, that's when I'm going to have the family over for kvass. No, make it, you know, with the intention of 2 or 3 days later, you're going to be drinking it.
Right, yeah. So let's talk about just the basics of making kvass. So you're going to start with some type of bread, obviously like a black bread or 100% rye pumpernickel is optimal.
Yes. Rye, pumpernickel, sourdough bread is another good traditional bread to put into a kvass. pretty much all you really need, if you've ever made soup at home, you can probably make a kvass because you probably have all the things that you need. You need a boil pot, about 1 gallon size would be sufficient. You can get a little bit bigger if you want to make a larger batch. Bread and water. And like I said, kvass is really unique in, since there isn't so much malt or yeast or hops in it, you can really add whatever you want to as flavorings. A lot of really traditional kvasses would have lavender, mint, rosemary, herbs, any type of herbs added to it to give it some more flavor. Mint was actually one of the more popular ones. Mm-hmm. So pretty much just, you know, go to your garden or your aero garden, you know, or whatever this time of year. Pick whatever's fresh and you can throw in there for flavor, and it really makes a difference. But, you know, to make it, you just heat up some water. If you have a, you know, colander, strainer, you can put your bread in that. Cheesecloth is also really good because, like you said, sometimes when you make it, you can just get a gluttonous mess.
Yeah.
it'll turn into more like porridge than an actual, you know, something that you can extract a wort from.
Right.
But, you know, you add the warm water to it, about 160, 180 degrees. You can bring the boil to you can bring the water to a boil if you really want to. It's not quite necessary. But the hot water really kind of helps it soak into the bread and extract the sugar from the bread a little bit.
I have a quick question with that. Do you keep it at that range after you bring the water to strike temperature?
It does help. You know, again, it's not quite like beer.
Right.
Where, you know, you're really concerned about getting the, you know, what types of fermentable sugars you want to get out of the beer. There's not too much fermentable sugars in that bread to begin with. Really, it's more of a flavor thing than getting the actual fermentable stuff out of that beer, or out of that bread. So it's not too much to worry about, you know, if it's 140 degrees or if it's 180 degrees, you know, your beer, your kvass is not going to be ruined. You know, don't worry, it's not quite as nerdy as homebrew beer making kvass. It's definitely a lot easier to make in terms of the chemistry. So you really don't have to hold it that temperature. Again, you can just dump it over that bread, but you're going to have to toast the bread first. If you don't toast the bread, you know, slice it up and toast it in your oven, usually about 225 degrees, to get all the moisture out of the bread. The bread will really turn into glue if you don't do that. Toasting it really helps. Makes all the world of difference. If you do one thing when you make a kvass, toast your bread. It'll make your life much easier. And then again, it's pretty much like beer after that. You kind of let it sit in there for an hour. You strain off your wort. Throw it into whatever you want to ferment it in. You know, what most people just ferment it in a glass jar on top of their, kitchen sink. Just cool it down like you would any other wort. You know, some people pitch yeast. Usually I will do everything from, I've used just regular bread yeast, I've used brewer's yeast, and, you know, I've also just, every time I make it, I leave the fermenter open, and whatever's in the air can just pop in there and ferment along with it.
So even with that, do you have any favorite yeast strains or favorite yeast?
Usually the yeast that I will use in a kvass is whatever is closest to the expiration date.
Yeah.
that's kind of how I use the yeast in there. Whatever's been sitting around for the longest that I need to use, that I haven't used for a while. You know, if in the summertime, a lot of times I'll use a saison yeast, something that's a little bit more susceptible to getting up to higher temperatures, and it's really not going to, you know, affect the beer and still ferment. So in the summertime I'll do that, but wintertime I'll usually either use just a regular old bread yeast, just a packet of yeast that you know get at your local grocery store. And if I'm going to use a brewer's yeast or something, I will toss in, you know, usually something that's not going to impart too much flavor, like maybe a California strain, some type of West Coast strain that's not really going to overpower it with something super, you know, clovey or banana or something like that, want a really clean flavor. So usually a West Coast strain will work for you.
Awesome. We've got to take a quick break. It's 15 minutes in. Thank you, Dan. We'll get back to you in just a second, talk about how this is fitting into your nano brewery.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA. Since the inception of the Heritage Turkey Project, more than 10 of Frank Reese's partner farms have converted to Good Shepherd, from a corporate system whose weak protocols on husbandry, welfare, and genetics necessitated the use of subtherapeutic antibiotics at all stages of production. When Frank Reese started in 2002, he hatched 900 eggs in his barn. This year, 20,000 eggs were hatched. This is an enormous victory for sustainable agriculture and biodiversity. For more information and to order your Heritage Turkey today, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. Every Wednesday at noon, Dorothy Cann Hamilton, founder and CEO of the International Culinary Center, interviews the top chefs in the world on Chef Story. Hear from chefs like Christina Tosi.
I'm going to be the best pastry cook this restaurant's ever seen.
Francis Malman.
Cooking with fire, it's very feminine, it's very fragile.
And Jacques Pepin.
I was invited to work at the White House for John Kennedy.
Learn how the greats become great every Wednesday at 12 p.m. on Chef Story at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to For Men About It. We're here talking to Dan Woodsky
of Beaver Brewing Company in Western Pennsylvania. We're talking about kvass. So we'll wrap up that conversation. I will say, I had full intentions of making kvass earlier last week so that we could actually drink it on the show. Unfortunately, that did not happen with our week. But we did make kvass yesterday, and it was extremely easy following your directions. We made two batches. We made one batch and then split it. We do brew in a bag for our home brewing. Mm-hmm. And I used the bag that I use for the brew in the bag technique actually to strain the rye bread out, and that was a big help.
Yeah, it was a gelatinous. That makes all the difference.
Yeah. And we just let it strain for a period of time, and it strained off beautifully. We split that into two batches. I have some food grade small, like 2 gallon buckets. So we had, it made, I guess, a little under a gallon each batch. Yeah. We didn't have fresh mint, but I have a really nice, licorice root mint tea with peppermint and spearmint. So we made a tea separately so that, you know, we didn't boil the water, just like a traditional tea, and we added that in. So we fermented
to one of them.
Yeah, so we fermented half with bread yeast. We added the mint licorice tea into that one, and then we did half with safe ale 05, which is just, you know, an American ale yeast. So they are bubbling away. It is bubbling away. They both have a nice krausen, and we just added a photo to our website.
Nice.
With a link to your book and to your brewing company.
Yeah, and actually, if you have the Kindle, I just set it up on the break right there. It'll actually be free starting at midnight tonight until midnight tomorrow night.
Wow, that's awesome.
That is
awesome. Yeah, so if you're interested in it, just hop on there and, you know, download it onto your Kindle for free tomorrow.
Fantastic.
Excellent. We will definitely let people know. The other thing is, this book is fantastic. I went ahead and, so with the Kindle, you can, or my iPad, I can highlight. So I highlighted all the recipes. So I've never made beet kvass, so I would like to also make that. The glazed donut kvass sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it adds a really, and it actually ferments pretty well too, because you're adding so much sugar from the glazed donuts compared to like normal kvass. Usually it won't get, it's not like beer. Like I said, you know, if you make kvass at home, you're getting a 1-2% alcohol drink, maybe max.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get that huge krausen that's going to be on top of your Hefeweizen or something like that.
I mean, does anybody make imperial kvasses? I mean, do they ever get, how big do they really get?
Actually,
where does it break
them? When most breweries that make a kvass, like I said, there's not too much they'll keep a kvass fresh in a traditional kvass. So when they make kvass, I like to call it imperial kvass. Anything over 2%, I would say, is an imperial kvass.
Yeah.
You know, traditional ones are definitely under 2. You know, a lot of times they're under 1% if you're not adding extra fermentable sugars to it. Like I said, mine, I have to add a little bit of wheat and a little bit of malt to it just to classify it as beer federally so I can sell it.
Yeah.
But it still tops out. I think the strongest kvass I've ever made was, I think, 1.8% alcohol.
Wow.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So, and then also mint kvass, you have a honey fig kvass, that's also on the list. I think the wonderful thing about kvass, so I'm huge on enabling urban dwellers to ferment. And it's difficult. I mean, I have Brew in a Bag. That's my adaptation, and I think it's wonderful. But I think a lot of people are intimidated by home brewing because they don't have the space and, you know, they don't have the roommates or the time or whatever. And I think kvass is an alternative beverage that pretty much anybody can do, regardless, or, you know, just people that are short on time. Maybe they have a new family or whatever. So I think this is a wonderful kind of urban, you know, modern brewing alternative for a lot of people that don't have the time or the space to brew beer.
Yeah, so, and it's healthy for you on top of all that.
So. Absolutely.
So, insert disclaimer here.
Yeah. So the other book that you have written is that, and you actually have brew school at your brewery, Beaver Brewing Company. So you've written a book on nano brewing.
Yeah. When I started up the brewery, I started getting emails literally every single day saying, hey, I want to do the exact same thing you're doing. You know, how do you do that? I mean, my brewery, compared to other breweries, it's a 1.5-barrel brew house, so 55 gallons.
Yeah.
I'm not brewing a million barrels a year. Doing on a very small scale. You know, I didn't go to brewery school. Never worked at a brewery before, and I figured, you know, this is a really easy way to get into the brewery business without spending $1 million on a 10-barrel brewing system and, you know, finding out you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
Started super small, and just, like I said, started getting these emails literally every single day. You know, how'd you do this? How'd you do that? I said, you know what, just to answer all these people, I'm just going to write a book, you know, and kind of see where this goes. And I figured, you know, like, 20 people would buy it, and, you know, it's been out for about 6 or 7 months now, and, you know, I'm always amazed at how many people are buying this, and I really think it's just goes to show that, you know, there's going to be, in these next couple years, I think a crazy amount of breweries popping up, and beer will start getting more local.
Absolutely.
And less, you know, when you look at your bottle, if you're sitting in Brooklyn, New York, you're not going to see California on the label too much.
Right.
You're going to see a lot more New York and a lot more local stuff.
I think you're absolutely right. We're seeing a lot of that. A lot of people, a lot of breweries, and planning here, out here, in the same with the same notion of small.
Yeah, and actually, Chris, we announced this last week, but so Chris Kuzme just became the brewer at a brew pub in Manhattan that has a 2-barrel system.
Yeah, so
wow,
my brewery is bigger than yours.
by a whole half a barrel,
by a whole couple gallons. Yeah. Yeah, and it's been pretty awesome. I'm in the same book as you. Like I'm not. I'm not professionally trained, but I've been homebrewing for a very long time, and I love this system. It's a perfect system for me,
mm-hmm,
I think, you
mm-hmm.
know, given my experience and stuff. And this talk today is actually really inspiring. I definitely want to make an Imperial kvass. Like, that's definitely on the list. That's coming soon.
Now, you brew some other very interesting beers. So like I said before, I am a huge advocate of brewing creatively. So tell us a little bit about, you know, some of the other beers that you brew or have brewed or have coming up. I know you just hit your 2-year anniversary with Beaver.
Yes, yeah. Probably one of the more interesting beers that I have, which I really don't think is crazy, but like when people hear it, they always give me this weird look on their face, like, don't think I want to try that. It's actually the Basil that I have. It's an amber ale. You know, just a traditional amber ale, which I always think is kind of like the most boring beer there is. You know, there's nothing all exciting about it. You really can't experiment with the yeast all that much. The hops are kind of, you know, boring noble hops that you put in there. So there's really nothing crazy you can do with an amber ale. So, you know, I figured, what is earthy that you can add to a beer that doesn't taste like anything that's in a beer? And, you know, basil is kind of the first thing that came to mind. And everybody is very familiar with the taste and smell of basil. If you ever walked into a, you know, Italian restaurant, you know what basil is. So it's something people were familiar with, but not familiar with in kind of this platform. So I add a pound of fresh basil to every batch, and, you know, it comes out with a really crazy aromatic, fresh, earthy smell to it. It really works as kind of dry hopping, almost.
It
gives, like, a really kind of, you know, I don't want to say a strong basil taste, but, you know, you can definitely taste it. I don't have to tell you there's basil in there for you to know that there's basil in there. That's one of the more crazy things I've had. And actually, I probably sell, you know, more of that almost than any other beer that I have. And when I made it, it was kind of just like, you know what, this is kind of, you know, something to get people in the door. But it's really kind of taken off to be one of the more popular beers that I have.
That's fantastic. And you're expanding to have a tasting room and
Yeah, actually, moving locations and opening up a small brew pub. Yes, here in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. It's like I said, I kind of did it as a test case to see, you know, does this make any sense? Can I actually do this? And then I was like, wow, people actually do want really crazy, weird beer around here. And I think that just goes. I mean, there's so many people out there homebrewing, you know, making different wild, crazy stuff. You know, I figured that was the way to go commercially too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So do you have some tips? Because I know using fresh herbs is somewhat intimidating for a lot of people. I mean, if you put it, you know, in your boil too early, you're going to lose the aromatics. And, you know, you can kind of, I always feel like you kind of burn the flavor. You kind of burn out the flavor and the aromatics. What do you have some tips for homebrewers that are using fresh herbs and spices?
Yeah, definitely. I would say absolutely do not boil any herbs that you use. A lot of people think, yeah, I'll just throw it in the boil. That'll kind of sanitize them, and, you know, I don't really have to worry about it. If you've ever, you know, cooked with herbs or anything, you know, cooking that gives it a really bitter kind of off-tree bark type taste to it. So you don't want to boil them. I actually will use the basil. I'll actually put it in, you know, almost like a grain bag and run the wort over it while it's cooling down. So all the beer actually touches the basil. But the basil does not stay in the fermenter. It just kind of works as a screen almost that all the beer goes through. And I think
before the heat exchange,
especially with basil, it's very leafy. It's not going to stand up very well if you just added it to the fermenter for 7 to 10 days. Herbs like rosemary, lavender. I do a lavender saison, which lavender actually stays up really well in a fermenter. You can put it in there for 2 weeks and it looks fresh as it did when you put it in there. So brewing with herbs, I just wouldn't boil any herbs, which kind of, you know, scares some people thinking, oh, I might add something, you know, bad to the beer. The yeast are going to kill off just about most anything that's on that, any bacteria that might be grown on that herb anyway. So you should be good to go. Good washing is probably all you need.
That's awesome. Those are great tips.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you have any recommendations for people that are, I mean, obviously, state-by-state laws differ as far as opening a nano brewery. I know Pennsylvania, there's a lot of nano breweries that have opened or are going to open, and we're seeing more in New York State. Do you have what would be your top two tips for somebody that's interested in opening a nano brewery?
Top two tips would be, the first one, go to your state liquor control board's website, print out the regulations, print out the forms, and read them all. A lot of people are really intimidated, saying, oh, you know, it's too hard. There's so many laws. You know, there are a lot, but if you print out an application, 80% of it is your name and address, like 17 times on 30 different forms. So, you know, really it comes down to like 10, 12 questions. You know, how big is your space? What do you plan on doing? So print out the regulations, get familiar with them. Print out the applications, get familiar with them. And number two is, you know, remember that you're running a business still. You know, it's cool that you're brewing beer, and that's great, but, you know, even brewing great beer sometimes isn't good enough. You know, there's a lot of breweries that have been brewing great stuff that end up going out of business. So don't forget in the end, you know, while this is kind of dreamy to be brewing beer and doing something really cool and fun that you get paid for, you know, in the end, it still is a business, so definitely keep your focus on that.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Dan, you're awesome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I looked at your website with that picture you had of the 40 different beers you had opening there, and I thought you guys were running a brewery yourself. That was pretty wild.
Yeah, I get a little overzealous sometimes. But
now that we cohabitate, we have 4 refrigerators for fermentation.
Yeah. So thank you guys for joining. We want to remind you, any Heritage Radio Network would love your support. All members receive 5% off at Bitter and Esters and Brooklyn Homebrew, two of our local homebrewing stores, as well as $1 off pints at Jimmy's Number 43. So thanks again to Dan Woodsky of Beaver Brewing Company. We've already updated our website with links to his website, as well as a link to his Kvass.
And his Kvass book is free from midnight tonight to midnight tomorrow night.
As well as his Nano Brewery book on Amazon. So we will speak to you next week. We've got Brewing with Honey with Peter Hepp of Bereria at Italy, 7 p.m. next Monday.
That's
cheers.
Right. Foment about it. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Like a red-eyed wild stallion.